The Guardian.
Hello, welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Rosie Swash, and the box of delights on this week's show includes: I get Essa in a headlock to get the truth out of him regarding everything from Butlin's cover band to Joe Meek. We look at Neil Diamond, Mikachu, and Nelly Akon and Ashanti in Singles Club. And I'll be saying what you said on the blog and Facebook last week. But firstly, imagine it's 1983. We're rolling up the sleeves of our pastel-coloured jackets at the nightclub and we're ready for some power pop. That was Paris is Burning by Lady Hawk, the 26-year-old pretender to the pop throne, a multi-instrumentalist who loves Fleetwood Mac and isn't ashamed to admit it. As well as releasing some fabulous music, Pip Brown, as she's known to her mum and dad, has been touring the world pretty much relentlessly with the Black Kids. But the rest of the time, the Kiwi-born singer calls New Zealand her home. So when I met up with her earlier this week, I began by asking her why the relocation.
I was kind of on the brink of deciding whether I wanted to stay in Sydney or go back to New Zealand, and then all the music I was making, kind of because it was starting to snowball, I just thought it would be a good move if I came to London for a bit. I thought, why not? I may as well. I've never been here before.
When you say it was starting to snowball, is that like you put it online and started to get a response, or you were sending demos out to people?
I put some songs up on MySpace, and lots of people were hearing it through that, and I got a lot of support from little independent radio stations and stuff, especially in New Zealand. But I only made a handful of demos, but people somehow managed to hear the music, and word of mouth spread, and it just kind of built up like
that.
And
this was, what, a couple of years ago or even...?
Well, I started it over 2 years ago, but about a year ago was when it started. Everyone started talking about it.
And you've said before that you really love being on stage. Is that still true, or are you starting to get fatigued?
I still enjoy being on stage. I enjoy it more so when the audience is there to see me as opposed to there to see someone I'm supporting, because quite often they can't be bothered watching you, and it can be quite,
spiriting.
Yeah, totally. You get a bit bummed out when you know they don't really care. At first I noticed that people would just kind of stand around and stare, but then every time I'd finish a song, everyone would clap and cheer, and I was like, hang on, it didn't look like you cared, but then you obviously were paying attention. But now that the shows are getting bigger and bigger and people are really getting into it, which is good.
Has it ever gone really badly wrong for you? Not necessarily bombed or something, it's just gone wrong and you've had to deal with it.
Yeah, I'm a walking klutz machine. Like, I'm really clumsy and awkward, and I've tripped over, I've just made an idiot out of myself on stage heaps of times. But when I was in Germany for Melt Festival, I walked onto stage and I had a shirt tied around my waist, and I started to sing into the microphone, and it started giving me electric shocks on my face. And I thought, okay, the first three songs all segued into each other, so I had to like wait till the third song to say anything. I couldn't even put my mouth up to the microphone without it zapping me. And then the shocks ended up going into my hand, and so the whole show had to be stopped, and they had to switch microphones. And then I was all happy that it was all back to normal, and then I looked down and my shirt had somehow wriggled its way down to like below my knees, and I was standing there like I had my pants down around my ankles as far as I was concerned. It was horrible, and I was like, wow, this couldn't go much better.
This is not part of the plan, guys.
Yeah.
This is
classic though.
You've said before that you're a real geek when it comes to music. You know, you like all the technicalities and the intricacies of how stuff is put together. Does that come from you messing about with a keyboard when you were a kid, or did you have more of a sort of traditional musical upbringing?
my musical upbringing was not traditional in the slightest. It was almost quite hippie. Like, there was a room in my house just full of instruments, and I was just left to my own devices. I just teach myself. So I taught myself everything I could except drums. I got lessons from my stepfather, who's an incredible jazz drummer, and I got lessons from him from the age of about 11. But I've just always been interested in how things work, and I like problem solving and puzzles and that sort of thing. So the idea of working something out like a machine, you know, when you have no idea how it works, is something that I really enjoy doing.
You do now is quite synthy and electronic, but you play drums and guitar and you play all that stuff. Is that self-taught?
Drums is not self-taught. I mean, that's from my stepfather, but it's something that came really naturally to me. But I taught myself everything else just through sitting down and spending a lot of time in my bedroom
listening to records.
Yeah, meditating. not much of a social life.
Can you remember the first song that you remembered being able to play?
Yeah, I remember, like, trying to play Come As You Are by Nirvana. That guitar line I wanted to learn really bad. That's one of the first ones. And maybe Love Me Do or something by the Beatles. I remember, like, slaving over for hours trying to work that one out.
And you've played in other bands. Do you much prefer being the front woman? Do you have aspirations of being the big front woman pop star?
It's not so much the front woman thing I like, it's the whole me writing all my own stuff and being in control of everything, and, you know, I dictate the way things are going to sound, and if I don't like the way something sounds, then it's not going to be there. Whereas if it was a band, then I would just be one of a quarter of everyone else's opinions, and usually there are a whole lot of opinions in a band, because I've been there before, and it's like too many cooks in the kitchen, you know. So I don't have aspirations to be a big pop person. I'm a bit too awkward and shy, I think, for that.
So the album's coming out September 22nd. Have you got a title yet?
It's self-titled. Okay. It's quite funny, actually, because someone interviewed me and said, what's your album called? And I was like, oh, it's self-titled. And then I read the article and it said her debut album called Pip.
It's like, she's obviously your real name.
They took it a bit too literally. Like,
I thought you were going to say, and she's called it self-titled.
Yeah, that would have been funny as well. And I was like, those idiots, like, I can't believe it.
So it's called Lady Hawk Lady Hawk.
It's self-titled, yeah.
What can we expect from it? Is it a concept album, or is it just a collection of stuff that you've written over the last couple of years? Or?
I sort of always thought of it almost like a compilation or a movie soundtrack, where it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It sounds a bit silly, but I thought out the track listing really carefully, and I wanted there to be a particular song at the end and a particular song at the beginning, and then things to kind of flow. And it's sort of got, like, you know, there's a lot of pop tunes in there and some electronic, and it's a mixed bag.
That was me talking to Lady Hawk. You can find out more about her UK tour that's coming up this autumn at myspace.com, Lady Hawk with an E, and the word rock, Lady Hawk Rock. Now, time for the bit where we listen to some music, talk about it and decide what we think. Yes, it's Singles Club. And joining me in the studio this week is Guardian/Music's Tim Jones.
Hi, Rosie.
Hi, Tim.
How are you?
I'm all right. Would you say you're having a good day?
I'm having a good day, yeah. There's nothing I like more than seeing people slagging me off on the blogs.
I think it's the best blog we've had since Shitbox.
Who says the standard of journalism has gone down?
Not on this podcast. And this weekend is the second Sunday in the month, so that must mean that it's Observer Music Monthly Week. Of course, you all know that. So here is OMM Assistant Editor Sarah Bowden. How are you?
I am very well, thank you very much.
Okay, well, you can read Singles Club at guardian.co.uk/music each Tuesday. But first of all, here we get a chance to play the tracks. So let's get underway, and we'll start with Neil Diamond, and this is Forgotten.
To do everything I knew, don't seem fair, 'cause look
way you left me. You got me waiting out in the back, under a stack, stuck in a bin you've been keeping me in.
That was Neil Diamond with Forgotten. Forgotten is taken from his current album Home Before Dark, which has only been out since May, but it's already gone gold. It's produced by Rick Rubin, who's worked with everyone from Jay-Z to Johnny Cash, as well as Neil Diamond on his previous album, 12 Songs. And to wrap Mr. Diamond up in a bunch of statistics, he sold 120 million records and was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 1984. But that means nothing to us, does it, Tim Jones?
I mean, absolutely nothing. What I really like about it is the guitars on it. It reminds me of Some Kind of Love by the Velvet Underground. In a good way. But whereas that's quite a dirty, sleazy song, this is a bit of a grumble, isn't it, really?
We were talking a little bit before about the Rick Rubin thing, about him kind of reinventing Neil Diamond's music and Neil Diamond as a musician. Does it work? Do you
I
like
think it,
it
totally works. I think a lot of people say it's Johnny Cash light, don't they? Maybe that's a fair criticism, but I think Neil Diamond really suits this sort of thing, and he really suits age. I think he really suits getting older. You know, he used to look a bit cheesy. Now he's kind of a bit cool.
And also what you were saying about the guitars, it's not something that I would ever really have picked up on in his previous stuff. Not that I really would have ever listened to it. But what Rick Rubin's done is strip it all back so that you can hear that stuff and that you get more of a taste for him as a musician. Sarah Bowden.
I don't think it's as so much a reinvention as him sort of taking him back to his early classic 60s stuff. That's okay. Just amazing songmanship. And if you listen to that stuff, it's quite funny. You can hear where Richard Ashcroft nicked quite a lot of his vocal styling from. Yeah, it's quite funny. But I love this. I think it's really great. I think his voice has got a really grainy, sort of vulnerable quality that I really like.
His voice sounds amazing. Totally.
I mean, I love it. And I thought 12 Songs was unbelievable. I thought it was such a beautiful record. But when we went to Glastonbury and I was saying I really want to see him, I feel like he still hasn't gotten over that bit where people are like, oh, Sweet Caroline, and just...
Yeah, the live show's still a bit schmaltzy. He's still got massive, massive backing band. And
hearing this after seeing him at Glastonbury,
yeah,
it doesn't seem like the same person at all. I was really bored at Glastonbury, really bored.
I did watch the highlights on telly. I agree, it was the same thing. So we all decided we prefer Neil Diamond when it's a little bit more stripped back.
Yes.
Okay, that's Forgotten by Neil Diamond, and it's out on the 11th of August. Second track on Singles Club is Body On Me by Nelly with Akon and Ashanti. Well, you don't want to come hang when your man didn't trip. You say you're short this month and you're late on your rent. He took your car, what you mean, homeless? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whoa, you see, look, mama, out of control, and I'm just saying. The way that you're walking, the way that you're talking. You're the one I want to spend this night with, trying to get in them drawers and bang it out till the morning. I can already tell you want it, because you're shaking it off for me. Astonishingly, this is from Nelly's fifth album. It's called Brass Knuckles, and to be honest, we thought he'd retired after Hot in Here. Ashanti has also been quietly getting on with making albums since her 2002 eponymous debut, though she remains famous for sampling Biggie Smalls on her number one track, Foolish. And if there's one man that doesn't need an introduction, it's Akon. He's barely out of the limelight, but he still found time to produce this track. Sarah Bowden, I think that you'll agree with me. There's just not enough sex in hip-hop today.
Yeah, this song is so deeply unsexy as well. Anything that features Akon at the moment is, really gets my goat. It's like synthetic whine, that auto-tune that he uses. It really winds me up and makes everything sound the same. And I think his lyrics are quite offensive as well.
In general or in this song?
From this song, trying to get in them drawers and bang it out till the morning. It's just like, that's so unsexy. It's just...
Can't read the female mind. That was one of my shout lines.
He's like a dog that's like constantly ear humping your leg or something. Yeah. He's just...
But that's part of the reason I wanted to pick this one, is because Akon is like, I mean, he is on everything at the moment. He's on the new Whitney track. I mean, he literally is on every collaboration. Nelly and Ashanti have been reasonably quiet, although, as I said, they have been making stuff. I was quite surprised when I was looking into it. I just thought these are two people that are resting on their earlier fortunes and don't really need to make music anymore. Is it a bit cynical that they're all on this record together, is basically the point I'm trying to make.
It's being billed as a sort of R&B supergroup, isn't it?
Whoa.
Well, it's horrible on so many levels, but I only put this song on for the first time about 10 minutes before coming into the podcast.
You mustn't.
And at the end of the day, it's totally stuck in my head, and that's why these songs do well.
It's because it's the last thing that you heard.
No, this song will be in my head for the next 3 years, probably.
So you like it?
I don't really like it, no. I mean, it's got no depth to it or anything, really. But, I mean, you know, I think it's got a very catchy chorus.
Do you think it's going to be huge? I mean, has Akon just got the ability to make it huge? Is he going to bring back these two people who haven't had a really massive hit for 5 years? Or is it just a sort of trade by numbers, recorded their vocals in the studio at the different... So this is really me venturing my opinion as if it's a question.
I suspect it'll be huge because they've made a very glossy video with, like, lots of smouldering looks in the breasts.
OK, do you feel comfortable with this conversation, Tim Jones?
I feel very uneasy.
Body on Me by Nelly, featuring Akon and Ashanti, is out next week too. Final track on Singles Club is Golden Phone by Mikachu. That was Golden Phone by Mikachu, otherwise known as 21-year-old Mika Levy. She appeared on Music Weekly a few months back as our esteemed guest, and she makes her own instruments out of anything from Hoovers to Walkmans, if you can remember them. Despite her youth, she's already composed for the London Philharmonic Orchestra and can call Bjork a fan too. Now, I'm a fan. I love Mikachu's stuff. I think she's brilliant. There you go. That's my opinion. End of. Anyway, so next. Tim.
I think it's great. Good. I think Curly Teeth, the last track that she released, was one of those songs where it's quite inventive, but I never really wanted to listen to it. I didn't think it had that much of a tune. I think this has got a bit more going for it. I mean, it's impossible to slag it off, really, because it's quite different. And it sounds like it's kind of a mix between someone twanging elastic bands and playing Tetris. So how can you not like that?
I don't just like it because it's sort of willfully experimental. What I like about this song, more so than Curly Teeth and another couple of the songs that I've heard of hers, is that she does have hooks and she does have really lovely melodies, simple pop melodies, and she wraps it up and all this stuff. But there's one of her songs, Get Me Well, which I just think is fantastic and I can't stop listening to, and it's just really, really simple. Sarah?
I agree with you. It's fantastic. It's a really poppy song, but it still manages to be subtle at the same time, even though it's got quite unusual sort of percussive feel to it. And that could come across as a bit of a try-hard conceit, but it doesn't think it works really well.
Definitely. It's like when you hear someone has written songs for that the London Philharmonic have done and had a grime mixtape, it kind of sets a few alarm bells ringing. You think, what the hell is this going to be like? But, you know, if you just heard it on its own, it sounds like a great pop song.
And obviously she, as a person, a character and a performer, is she part of the charm? Does she carry it off well?
You've met her.
Yes, she does. Okay, that's me venturing an opinion and then just like raising my voice a little bit at the end as if it's a question. So we agree, Mikachu is amazing and Golden Phone is out on the 11th of August too, as with the rest of the singles we mentioned. Now, you've had your say on last week's singles on the blog and there was much love for Mudhoney, but we'll be getting back to that in a bit. First of all, Kebabette snuck in the following. Santa Gold and Neon Neon have been the two sounds this year that have kicked me in the guts and swept me along. Sheer sparkling pleasure. It's not the 80s-ness, though that doesn't hurt. It's the variety and energy. Yum. I Love Martin Gell took me up on my love for the new Verve track, which I'm also standing by. He said, Rosie, I'm shocked. That Verve song is awful. I mean, what the hell is that weird AO Teletubbies style refrain that goes on throughout the whole song? I pissed myself laughing when I first heard it. I remember way back when they made much more interesting, soundscapey, shoegazing, epic music and sold no records at all. But Shane07 agreed with me, and so it seems I was right all along. You can post your reviews of the show. There's a theme developing. That's what happens when you put me in charge. Post your reviews on this week's tracks, Neil Diamond, Mikachu and Nelly, on our blog at blogs.guardian.co.uk/music, along with what you think of these tracks that are also out to buy next week.
Even the greatest gotta suffer sometimes. So I huff and puff rhyme. Lyrics so sick with it. Set the standard in Atlanta. How to get.
Thanks to Sarah for listening to the tracks today.
Anytime.
Before you go, I want you to tell us what's going to be in your esteemed publication this Sunday.
On the cover, Damon Albarn and Jamie Hewlett talking about their monkey project, and we sent Paul Morley out to meet them, and he's done his usual unique Paul Morley take on things. Also, we have got Minister's daughter, Katy Perry, who's causing a bit of a hullabaloo amongst gays and Christians with her sapphic hit, I Kissed a Girl.
Have you heard the latest is that Madonna is planning to reenact her lesbo kiss with Britney Spears, which we've obviously all been waiting for desperately for a reenactment of that, with Katy Perry.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
And we also do a behind-the-scenes expose on the music business and find out how much people earn from music journalists to record company execs and office juniors.
What music journalists are in there?
Well, I couldn't possibly divulge. You'll have to read it and find out. Julian Cope talks to John Savage about his love of krautrock, Stone Circles, and his desire to be a cultural irritant. And finally, a piece on the Aldermaston generation. Aldermaston is where the British nuclear weapons are made. Protesters who marched to ban the bomb in the 50s, that sort of whole movement kind of gave birth to British protest songs. So we've got the likes of Michael Foot and Ewan McCall telling us about their memories of that.
Well, what an eclectic bunch. But you know what I'm going to be going there for? I want to find out what the music journalist salaries are. That's basically what I'm going to be going in there for.
Fair enough.
All right, well, thank you very much, Sarah. Well, that signals the end of Singles Club this week. But Tim and I put together the Singles Club column every Tuesday at guardian.co.uk/music. Now we hear from a man who is unashamedly making pop, pop, pop. We know so because it says it on his MySpace. You got me in the right state. You got me messing up all my moves. Headlock by Essa. Now, on the blog a couple of weeks ago, Ryland told us off for not reviewing it. And this week, we're hoping to make up for it because we actually spoke to Ben Essa, and by we, I mean me. Formerly the drummer with avant-garde group Lady Fuzz, Essa rebranded under his second name as a solo purveyor of electropop. Well, I chatted to him about his colourful past, which has involved all sorts of musical ventures, as you'll get to hear. So I wanted to take him back to the beginning, and I asked him, how did it all start?
Yeah, it's kind of been constant, really, from like when I started playing drums, which was really young, and then my dad kind of bought this keyboard and I used to program stuff on there when I was really young.
Because you used to play drums in Ladyfuzz. Mm. So how did you make the progression from drummer to frontman?
It wasn't really that intentional. It just kind of happened. I was like writing songs, and the only way for me to kind of do it was to have to sing in front of people. So it kind of happened out of necessity, really.
Do you feel comfortable with the
not frontman? Really, no.
All right, let's go back a little bit, because I'm quite fascinated by your dual period, possibly overlapping, of you playing drums in a cover band in Butlins, but also being really into UK garage, which is a passion that I share with you. So be as open about that as you want.
Yeah, well, the covers thing just kind of happened because I was at college and I was working in Tesco's, and that was really horrible. So the kind of like easiest way to make a bit of money as a musician is just to do cover stuff. So that's kind of how it happened, really. But bit of a strange thing.
Did you enjoy it?
I did, in a kind of dark way. It was, yeah.
What were you playing?
Well, we did like loads of covers, like 60s stuff, and like we did. We did some really bad Britpop stuff.
Like
we played James.
Sit Down.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that was a classic. We did like Mustang Sally. We did Stuck in the Middle. Oliver Archer slinking away. I read it in the papers. Almost every day.
At what point did you come up to London and get involved in Ladyfuzz and all that?
Well,
sort of
yeah, when I left college, I kind of thought that probably wasn't the best thing for me to be doing, playing covers and stuff. So I wanted to do other stuff and get involved in things that were happening. And so I met Liz from Ladyfuzz, and we kind of started doing some stuff together. And then we just kind of started doing things, really. And it was quite an interesting little scene that was happening, so that's how I got involved with that, really.
But you've also said that was that period, or maybe it was just after, it was a lot of sort of signing on, and it was actually the struggling musician period.
Yeah, it was really. I think that was a bit of a struggle, like financially. I ended up pawning loads of really nice guitars.
Oh no, the pain on your face. I take it you never got them back.
Well, they're my girlfriends.
Oh. Current girlfriends still together?
Yeah.
Wow, blimey. It must be love. Lately, I know that we've been fighting, and I don't want to fight anymore. I've not worked half as much, but I know that you're worth working for. Let's work it out. While we're on that subject, I want to talk, because your current music, the lyrics, I think you seem just totally bewildered by women and the world of love. And it's all sort of like, what have I done now? I think that's fair.
Yeah, it is a bit.
Probably not the sum of your parts, but I like the role that you play in a lot of your songs.
I just was really fascinated by that as a kind of concept. Musically, it kind of borrows from classic sounds and ideas of pop music, so that's what interested me about kind of writing about love and kind of cliche. Love can be dangerous like a fire in your kitchen. You bring me up, then you tear me apart. Still, love is no excuse for bad art.
The musical influences, because they seem quite varied on there.
The kind of English pop music, I guess that's like the underlying thing that I've always been really into. Joe Meek was like a massive influence in the way it was like pop songs, but it was very warped. It seemed a lot more naive at the time, you know. You could do these things and people didn't really realise what a lot of the songs would be about or the kind of underlying elements or the kind of bizarreness to them. And that's kind of something that kind of fascinated me about Joe Meek, I think. And the sounds as well, you know, sonically it was really interesting.
And do you think that pop music is in quite a healthy state at the moment.
It always really excites me when I hear something for the first time on the radio that's interesting, you know, when I heard Timbaland, but I don't know, there's always seems to be the underlying dross.
There doesn't seem to be any sort of one youth musical movement like there used to be in times past. Do you think that's a good thing? Do you think people...
No, that kind of upsets me quite a bit, actually. Like, the lack of kind of youth movements and just, like, subculture in general at the moment is in a really odd place. I think there's, like, a lack of understanding of pop culture.
Would you like to be a... I was going to say pop idol. Would you like to be an idol to your fans?
Not really. I don't think so. I don't think there should be a hierarchy of music between, like, artist and consumer. I think it should just kind of be the same thing.
That was Essa. He'll be playing Reading and Leeds Festival this summer, and you can download his single Headlock for free at myspace.com/EssaHQ. Now, as mentioned, Mudhoney kicked off a storm on the podcast blog last week with Skilleye declaring Mudhoney rule and they're lovely blokes. Very true, very true. A few of our regulars complained about the volume of the band's gig at Kentish Town Forum in London, but then Gatecrass moved things on with quite a long post. I'm from South Yorkshire and have been visiting Seattle, or rather Bellingham, the last outpost before Canada, on and off since 1993, visiting friends every couple of years or so. It does get relevant in a second. By pure coincidence, I got into Pearl Jam, and much to the wife's dismay, never got out of it. I love them. There, I said it. Here, Pearl Jam have a relatively small but loyal fan base, the way I like it. But what's always struck me is that when I go over to Seattle, it's how mainstream Pearl Jam were and are viewed. They are seen as soft rock and commercial. Maybe it's just my friends, but when I'm here, no one knows Pearl Jam. And when I'm there, it's like admitting to liking Travis over here. That said, I can't for the life of me understand why anyone doesn't like Pearl Jam. I guess beauty is in the ear of the beholder.
I think it is his friends, because I don't think they're seen as a particularly edgy band over here, are they?
No.
I can't say I'm a fan. Are you?
I like one song by Pearl Jam. I think it's amazing. Two songs by Pearl Jam, but we'll get onto that in a minute. The discussion quickly turned to Pearl Jam, with Rosie Swash, that is myself, posting that Black was the best Pearl Jam song ever. A few nods of agreement, including Pete Lawson, who said, "Ah, Black, it's like being 14 again and Jackie still won't go out with me. Happy times." Before Adam Lacey challenged and said Yellow Ledbetter was, well, better. So who is right? Or is Jeremy the best Pearl Jam song ever, which is the other Pearl Jam song that I like?
You only liked one before.
Yeah, and then I said, oh, I'm a bit...
By the time this podcast finished, you'll have the box set out.
Basically, discussion closed. Black is the best Pearl Jam song ever. Finally, the Boz Boss asked, Paul Mack, is that your voice on my TV advertising Energizer lithium batteries? Are your friends at The Guardian not paying you handsomely enough? It's not, no. His is the voice that's advertising Rimmel. If you don't get that, then just Google Paul McInnes plus the word makeup and you'll understand. Like our good Facebook friend James Kinsella, who said of last week's DJ Martin cooling, listen to the podcast just now. The reviewers and most sensible reviews that have been on for ages. Not that Michael Hann or former Man About Town Mr. Tim Jones aren't good, but he was a breath of fresh air. Good tunes probably helped, but well done, that man. P.S. Mr. McInnes, Manscara, you should be ashamed of yourself. I'm not saying any more. Google it. Also, we may or may not have asked this on our Facebook status thingy, whether it was deeply wrong that we couldn't stop listening to the new Keen song, and our listeners confirmed that it is indeed deeply wrong.
Lucky we've got these listeners. Keep us on track.
I mean, I don't like it. Fiona Petch in Plymouth said, Keen, deeply, deeply wrong. It reminds me of the old Grange Hill theme. I'm not convinced that's a bad thing.
Not at all. Especially the bit when the sausage comes in on a fork. If it had that on it.
Just time to say hello to some new Facebook friends. Connor McCaffrey, James McKeown, Brandon Sarmagale, Jeff Scurry, James O'Toole, Guilherme Sardi Aquino, and Donna Robertson. I've almost certainly pronounced some of those wrong, but hello. post comments on this week's blog. Tell us what you made of Essa and Lady Hawk, as well as all the music that featured in Singles Club. It's at blogs.guardian.co.uk/music. Now, on next week's programme. Witness the fitness, the prophets are living. One hope, one quest. Witness the fitness. That is Roots Maneuver, and I'll be meeting Rodney Smith, the man who's been at the forefront of British hip-hop for the last 10 years, next week. So we'll be back next Friday if you want to listen to that. You can get us on your iPod or computer automatically, and it's for free. All the details are at guardian.co.uk/music. Just click on the podcast when you get there. And that's all for this week. Thank you, Tim.
Thanks for having me.
See you next week, gang.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.